All right, we're going to let's just summarise this morning. I was talking to Stuart over lunch. Just found the second muscle in my body that I possess. Oh, I've got two muscles now. I'm on, yes. I didn't have to look for this one. The first one I had to search for. Scarlett's on a roller. Whoa, ripple, you know. 8-pack, let alone 6-pack. Friday evening, I was in bed. Sick as a dog. Spent a week in Florida being sport rotten by my 83-year-old mum and crawling around the estate with my dad, and he was walking faster than I was, and he's 85. I got back and I was really frightened. I thought, well, they love me. They'll miss me. I don't give a hoot. What will happen to my business? And I got back and it took me 2 days to catch up. This is stupid. If I can catch up in 2 days, what am I playing at for 5 days a week? I sat down at Douglas. The workshop is 2 days before his holiday, and he just had to sit down and think, what is my priority? And my priority is I've got to deal with my clients before I go away. And so he phoned me last minute and said, I just can't make it. But I bet you Scott will deal with all the priority jobs before he goes on holiday, because he's not going to miss the plane. And, you know, he's got some priority, and they will get done. And that then helped me to think about Parkinson's Law, which is Parkinson's Law.
Work
does expand to fill the time available. And if you had a 4-day working week, I could almost guarantee your revenue would not change.
I think statistically it would increase.
You just get it done in 4 days and cut out all the nonsense. And you would get rid of clients. You just would, because you wouldn't have time to deal with the rubbish clients. Or the clients that cost you money, or the clients that annoy you, or the clients that are rude to your staff, and so on and so on and so on. You just do it, because you'd only get 4 days a week. And I watched Julie Lord, and I watched other people, and I listened to Nigel. Just made a decision, set the conditions. It's 4-day working week. Then it'll be three. And all of those thoughts came into the preparation of today. The one we're about setting the condition of you will attend the quarterly workshop, and I've got to be here with something prepared, is that I make sure I don't spend too many weeks on it. You know, I've got this defined set of time, and I have to cram 100 hours into that defined set of time, and then it's over with, it's just done. And the beauty about having, the reason why I spend so much time on these things is because next year I don't have to spend this time on these things. I might tweak it, but I've poured my heart into this and my soul, you know, 50 pages worth of information. It's worth a fortune to me. Sam is already turning three of these workbooks into a home study course back at, whilst we're sitting here. That's what he's doing back at the office. It's taking him forever. All the words transcribed. Listens to this, gets them transcribed in Pakistan or somewhere, or Washington DC or whatever, on the internet. Comes back, then you've got to check the transcribed type against the words on the audio. It takes him, but it's a whole package product and service, home study course, in a box. 10 CDs, 12 CDs, 20 CDs, workbooks, transcripts, everything. So this is worthwhile doing in a very focused time. Outlook, watch this Parkinson's Law. If you want to get something done in less time, give it less time. Give it less time. It's magic. It just gets done. Outlook. Who here has their Outlook bleep, the audio beep, switched off? Do you have it switched off? Yeah. And who here has the Outlook little window thing that pops up switched off?
Sorry. I haven't figured out how to do it.
Okay. No. Well, you and a number of other people in the room. Who knows how to switch that Outlook window off?
Is this what emails are beaming?
Yeah. Yeah. Deep little window appears at the bottom of the screen. Who knows how to switch that off? Peter.
Mine's off.
Okay. Why don't I talk to Peter and we get something, some little thing, just, yeah? Get one of the techies just to write a little note. How to switch it off. Yeah. We'll send you in the post this hammer. Here's your fixer-upper. Good. Turn the darn thing off. Now, if that means, who here would then have a problem with not being able to access the addresses of their clients and all their contacts? So what I've done for me, this may not be the answer for you, but I've tried to find out what's the most intuitive, understandable, simple client database system that would replace that, so that I don't have that problem.
Telephone directory?
And so Peter's supplied me with a CRM. Okay, CRM. Which is what?
Customer relationship management.
CRM. So you're all now my CRM. See, so I don't need Outlook on all day, which is why I don't get annoyed by the bleeps. So step one is wait for the hammer, and step two, which will be email to you. And step two is think seriously about can it convert from Outlook?
Well, I won't get technical.
Okay. So I was lucky I had it all on spreadsheets. So I was managing these spreadsheets and then out.
You can do it from your database, we can do it from anything.
And he just literally technologically converted it all back at his office. Just got it done.
I don't really understand this. What's a CRM?
Well, CRM is where you take all your client data that's on Outlook, let's say, and put it on this separate client management database, so that you can turn this darn thing off all day, except for the 1 hour that you want to deal with your emails. That's
it. You can turn it off anywhere, can't you?
Well, you can, but then they can't access their addresses.
Who can't?
Well, the people using addresses on Outlook.
Who are they? Sorry, I'm lost here. Sorry.
Well, all their addresses and telephone numbers of their clients and all their contacts are on Outlook.
Who's there?
So if they want to access the data,
they've
got to turn Outlook on.
Well, it's providers as well.
Yeah. We're just trying to stop you looking at your emails. If you go into your addresses, you might attempt to look at your emails. So if we turn that off, you won't attempt. Yeah. So put your addresses somewhere else on your computer.
So the challenge is, how do I stop emails coming in or bleeping at me all day long when I need my addresses in front of me so I can access them and talk to my people? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So get rid of that, put the addresses here, and I have to tell you that you then be able to manage your clients better in terms of communicating with them. So I've now got my little system, finally worked out how to use it, because I'm really thick, as Peter will tell you, and so I just go June 2009, and it comes up, all the people I got contact in June 2009. Oh, magic! I love that. And next month I go, July 2009, and go, boom, all the people I've got, and why I've got to contact them, all that kind of stuff. And the new newsletter, which will come out, I hope, tomorrow, just for IFA, so I'll have the Thinking Bench. I'll also have an IFA-only newsletter, is on that system. You can see how easily impressed I am. All right, let's turn to page 21. Summary of all this morning was, if you do as I've suggested you do, I promise you, you will save more than 6 hours every week. If you do as I suggested you do in the hours this morning, I promise you, you will save out of your working life more than 6 hours every week. Why do I know that's possible? Because that's what I did. We're now aiming to save another 6 hours every working week, and we're going to look at people. And the three conditions of people we want to work on are the community that we live in, we'll talk about that briefly, the clients we work with, and the team around us that we work with also, which could be our support team or our peer group. Does that make sense? So let's turn over to page 22. I'm not going to discuss this because we're going to go faster and faster. I want you to take your pen and tick those circles which you think have influenced your life. Tick those circles where you think, you know what? The people around me have influenced my ideas, my beliefs, my relation. This is how they've influenced me. Just tick where you think you have been conditioned by the community around you, and you define what your community means. Could be your family, could be your professional peer group, could be your church group, it could be your clubs, whatever. Tick what circles you think you've been conditioned by in this way. So grab your pen and just tick it. I think I've been influenced in this way by the community around me. And the bottom left-hand one is the most scary. Yeah. Two things about the rest of today. If I look at you really strangely, it's not because you've got spinach on your teeth. It's because I know a noise came from somewhere, I just can't tell where it came from. And that's part of the problem I'm now developing. So I hear you, but I don't know who it was I've just heard in a group. So I'm starting to develop a group problem, group hearing problem. I can hear you, I just don't know who said it. So I'm going to ask you to forgive me before we start this afternoon. If I look at you really strangely, it's like, did you just open your mouth? Was it you? Or does he sound really strange all of a sudden? All right. It's just a hearing problem that's become more acute in the last 18 months, really. So I'll go to hospital this August. Have a look at it. So if I look at you really strangely, it's because I'm trying to read your lips also. It's got really strange. You do not want to wait till you're my age, okay, to live these dreams, because this is the problem you'll have. Okay, anybody have any queries and question marks on these circles? Catherine had one with the earnings. So your query there, Catherine, was what?
I've ticked everything, and I got to their earnings, and then read that again and thought, well, actually, has that influenced me? And I thought, yes, because of their earnings, they're living a certain way of life, and in a roundabout way, it probably has influenced me, but I don't want to admit that it doesn't.
Yeah, and I have to say, I've got no proof of this. I just keep reading this wherever I try and do this research, that the people we spend time with, professionally and privately, we tend to fall within the median or, I guess, average of that earnings group, is what we tend to privately earn and take home. And it's weird. I don't know why it is, but that's just mentally where we're set. Now, there are people in this room clearly who have broken through that. But the people we tend to mix with actually end up influencing how much we think we're able to earn. So strange. They start putting a ceiling on what we believe our capacity is, because that's where we work and mix and live and feel and aspire. And it's the aspiration thing that happens. They just hold our aspirations in this region within which they're comfortable, and then we end up being comfortable in that aspiration region too. It's really strange. But everywhere I go to read on this information, this research, this subject, it keeps popping up. I think, oh, well, I know it's happened to me. I wonder if it's happening to you. Think about it. Community that you work with and live with will start setting your emotional and mental conditions, whether you like it or not. If you wish to change your conditions, what's the message I'm giving? It's a bit rude, isn't it? You might want to think about changing your community.
But it's a bit like being a sportsman. You know, if you keep playing somebody who's not as good as you, you'll never improve. So you change your community to play against, if you're a tennis player, you play against people who are better than you. if you're a footballer, you, you want to play against teams that are better than you.
Well, the Scots don't want to play in England.
Especially at rugby.
Well, IFA is all, because that's who you are in this room. Be really, really careful about your IFA community. If you find yourself in a room of whingers, get to heck out of it. Just change your community. Right, they'll drag you down, won't they? They'll drag you down until you start thinking like them. Particularly that the fact is they're not comfortable with you thinking differently. And you won't fit in. So get out.
One of the sayings that Nigel invented, wasn't it? Birds of a feather flock together.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. we birds do that, don't we? Yeah. So think about that. I was speaking to a young man the other day, just come back from a 2-year assignment in Philadelphia, 2-year service assignment for the church. So he's very young. And I said to him, I know your parents very well. I've known them for years. I was one of your youth leaders for about 5 years. I was responsible for you and about 100 others for a period of years. I tried my best to influence you and the way you thought and felt. I conditioned you as hard as I could, in order that eventually you will be a happy, balanced, giving, mature, emotionally fulfilled young adult. What caused you to go on that 2-year service assignment, give up everything in your life, pay for yourself, okay, be stuck in the middle of a country that you've never been to before, in Philadelphia, which could be a pretty rough place to be, okay, pretty high murder rate on the streets he was on. No dating, no music, no TV, no stereos, no iPods, none of it allowed. What caused you to do that? Tell you what his answer was. He looked at me and said, it wasn't you. He said, though I loved you. And I really appreciated what you taught me and the things we did together and the camps we went on and the athletics tournaments we arranged together and the swimming tournaments we had and the dances you arranged and the wide games we played in the forest. And I said, it wasn't any of that. It wasn't my parents. It was my friends. I said, but I know some of the friends you mix with at school. He said, yeah, I know them too. And so I got to a stage where I decided to drop them. And I loved them. Because I looked at where they were going. I looked at where my other peer group was going. And some of the people who come back from 2-year service assignments from Ukraine, China, Finland, looked at the sort of young men they were and decided, I want to be like that. That's the kind of guy I want to be like. And I dropped my friends. And I stayed with these friends. And it just changed him. Conditioning. Community. He chose his community. I have to tell you, at 18, that's really scary. I couldn't have done that. I'm not sure about you. I needed my friends. I was desperate for inclusion, weren't you? Desperate to be wanted and liked. Community is what he decided. The end result is just an amazing young man. Astonishing. Some of the stories he told me about Philadelphia would make your hair curl. He probably, the way that employees measure him and his peer group, talking to employees who interview these guys, they measure them as being of the maturity ability of a 40-year-old at the age of 21. That's what they go through. They have the capacity to make long-term, emotionally balanced decisions of a 40-year-old at the age of 21. Conditioning, community. Clients, page 23. take your pen and tick those boxes where you think your client, some of your clients are. Tick those boxes where you think, I know some of my clients match that description. And just for the sake of recording, unprofitable, unreasonably demanding, time-wasting, chaotic life baggage. What do I mean by chaotic life baggage? Graham, what do you think chaotic life baggage means? This is about clients.
It's my family,
actually. See a prospective client with chaotic life baggage. What do I mean by that?
Well, I suppose, yeah, in terms of stuff, you know, that, you know, maybe they put demands on you, you know, sort of because of their lifestyle, the way they run their business would, you know, need them or them to need you more to deal with, you know, parts of their lifestyle.
Okay, really is chaotic and rubbishy. Yeah, I've met some really unpleasant clients, haven't you? And decided I don't want to deal with you because their life was just a shambles. It was just unpleasant. Unrealistic expectations. Who has clients with unrealistic expectations? And maybe you've managed those out. Who has clients that are not within their target market? That assumes you have a target market, of course. You see, and if you don't have, and this thing I've been really beating you up over the last 9 months, haven't I, about choosing a niche target market. Because if they're not in it, then why are they part of your lives? It's really difficult to then define, well, should they be in or should they be out? But if you know what your target market is, you know who should not be in your client base and wasting your time. What do I mean by needs mismatch, Jeremy? Needs mismatch.
The service you're providing is not what they're looking for.
Yeah. And that's about your integrity or your desperation. Yeah? You know exactly what I'm saying. You're trying to make up something that you really don't know what you're doing. So it's not your skill set. Not future-based. Gordon, what do you think I mean by not future-based?
Possibly clients who are drawing money out of their asset basis rather than.
Okay. Any other thoughts, Ian, for not future based to add to what Gordon's just said?
I think it's where there's an immediate transaction to be done.
Yeah.
Money out of it, but there's nothing ongoing, there's no interest or desire for a future relationship.
All right. How do you find out if a client is not a future based individual? Alan, do you want to have a bash at that? How do you find that out?
We ask them.
Which?
And the question is,
yeah?
If we were sitting here today,
right,
3 years ahead,
okay, got it.
Eating coffee, having cake, where would you want to be?
And you all know this question, don't you? You all know it. If the answer to that is not satisfactory, you've got a problem. What's the problem you've got? What's the problem you've got? If the answer to that question is, I don't know.
Aspirations. They don't have aspirations.
Well, what problem does that cause you?
You don't know what to deliver, so they'll blame you for everything else that you don't deliver.
Okay, don't deliver. What other problem does that cause you?
They don't involve you. They don't plan your planning service.
Yeah. If there's no aspiration, what are you planning? Don't want a future anyway. So what are you all about? You're supposed to be a life financial planner. Well. Got one plan, got no future, got no aspirations, don't really care. What's your time about? Really don't know. Well, can't work with you then. Can you see the problem you've got? Then you go and make it all up and try and flog them a this, that and the other. It's just tacky. Right, so choose your client quality really carefully. Oh, no referrals. Who here has clients and they have asked them and they refuse to give them referrals? Point blank refused. Okay. If they love you, then referrals should be a natural part of your relationship. That you set the condition at the beginning. Remember that earlier on this year? You set the condition. If you've not set the condition, your problem. Okay, another condition. Have a look at 24 and just answer this question. Just spend 30 seconds on it. What happens when you do this is the question. Have a look at it carefully. Look at the bottom questions and answer me, what happens when you do this? Any thoughts? Simon?
You suddenly realise that people you thought were your best clients aren't.
Yeah. Yeah. This is always a shock. Whatever you tell me, I look at you as if to say, oh yeah, show me that. And when you show me it, you go, ooh, didn't know that. I love Kate's recent analysis. She did it was a really good analysis, wasn't it? I mean, it was quite detailed. We kind of talked about it. And then what we did on the phone by email was, I took the columns and I switched them around. So I moved the assets to the front and then go, let's rank by assets. Sent it back to Kate. Oh, blimey. Then we did it by something else. Let's rank by, I don't know, age. You'll always be wrong about what you think about your clients. So part of my responsibility in this relationship is you need to do this analysis. And if you try and avoid it, then I'll really shove it in your face, because it's just laziness. It's you pretending you know your client base, and I know you don't.
And if I can also say, if I didn't have anybody else that could have done it, it would have been worth me taking out 2 weeks out of seeing clients to actually get the information that I've now got.
Because
I can now see where I'm wasting time. I can see, in just doing that, I can see how I can create more time for myself. And I can see that I can actually get rid of 20 clients and not miss the income that I'm getting from them.
20 clients. Wow. Wasting your life. Okay, exercise. It's not for me. 25 and 26. As a team, talk that through and see what you come out with on page 26.